Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Coco Express Show for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013. We are already in July. This year is going by so fast, so fast. It has been an amazing, amazing month for me. The month of June was just spectacular. There were so many different events that were going on. There were so many different interviews that were done that were just phenomenal interviews. And even though we had some setbacks, it was still an amazing month filled with tons of opportunities for us to learn and grow. I had the pleasure, well, on Saturday, many of you know that we had to reschedule the show we were supposed to do live and just do a regular show from the studio. And it was really interesting. Many of the members who were supposed to be on this particular segment panel had some really serious events happen to them. And at first thought, you know, you're like, well, what's going on? And it was really interesting. Valencia Lyle Saunders, the host for Saturday Show You, the best invention ever, she put it so nicely. What was the universe trying to say? Because we had all these series of situations happening all at the same time. So she just really wasn't too sure about what was going on, but she knew that the universe was trying to tell her something, and we followed it. And I would like to wish Marilyn Ocasio a speedy recovery as she fell and busted her knee open and had to get stitches and is on crutches right now. I would like to wish Owen Thomas all the best. He had an incident where someone tried to break into his home. No one was hurt or injured. However, everyone is safe. I just wish them the best, and my blessings are with them. Kim Van Dorn, she had a virus, and hopefully she has recovered from her virus, and I wish her speedy recovery on that as well. My blessings go out to each and every one of the members on the panel. And this month, we hope to do that show live for you, and hopefully everyone will be on the mend and ready to rock and roll with you, and we will love that. I also had the pleasure of interviewing in the month of June Ricky Kenshin, a member of Mint Condition. Well, along with that, Saturday I got tickets to go see an evening with Mint Condition at the TD Bank Center in Sewell, New Jersey. And I have to tell you, it was an amazing, amazing show. And I had a great time. Howard Hewitt was one of the guests, as well as John B. and, of course, Mint Condition. And I have to give props to King E&J and his brother. They did an amazing, phenomenal job of putting on this particular show. And I have to say, it was just amazing and wonderful. So today on the show, we are supposed to be having another phenomenal person, because we keep getting them and we keep putting them out there for you to know. Her name is Nadia L. Lopez, and she is a principal. And she's supposed to be with us now, and she is one special lady. I have to admit that we are all given the opportunity to excel at something. You're all given the opportunity to go to school, to learn as much as we can so we can develop and grow into successful, productive citizens in this country or wherever we decide to be. This particular woman, not only did she decide to take her education seriously, but she is one of those dedicated professionals who believes that each and every individual is entitled to have an opportunity to know what their potential is going to be. She does this by being a principal of her own school. It's called the Mott Hall Bridges Academy. I take education very seriously because knowing my history, knowing where I come from, leaves me in a position to really believe that if I don't take my education seriously, I am dishonoring my heritage and my ancestors. And anyone who decides that they are going to put their time, effort, and energy towards molding, developing, and shaping a young person's life, for me, they are heroes in my book. Please allow me the opportunity to introduce to you Nadia L. Lopez, a woman who is a hero from my perspective. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. And thank you so much for that wonderful intro. I truly appreciate it.
Oh, well, it is well deserved because you are a phenomenal woman. And I have to tell you, there are so many different things that I just want to ask you and that we can discuss with this interview. But please, let's start with you telling our listeners about you.
I was born and raised in Brooklyn. My parents are both immigrants to this country. My dad is from Honduras. My mom is from Guatemala. So my foundation of how important education is really started from them. They didn't have any riches. All they had was the drive to find the best school in New York City for me to go to and get educators who really cared and was about providing the strongest foundation that would lead me to becoming a well-educated person when in my future. So really kudos to my parents. Once I graduated college, I actually went to school to be a nurse, and my intention was to save the world through the healthcare field. But then I realized that healthcare profession is you don't have a long-term impact on individuals. I really wanted to know their stories. I wanted to be able to have more of an impact long-term. So I ironically went to work for Verizon for a stint, and at that point I had my own daughter. And what woke me up to education was the fact that I wanted to be the example and the standard that had been set for me throughout my educational career. And we often complain about the youth and we complain about what they lack, but we don't get into the mindset of how are we going to be the ones to provide solutions as opposed to constantly dwelling on what seems to be the concern. So I decided to become a career changer. I went into New York City teaching fellow, and my path went on to me knowing that you can create an outstanding institution, but you have to believe in the children, one, and you have to get adults who are on board wanting to do that. And that in and of itself is really hard because oftentimes our kids only learn by who sets the example. So I decided to become a founding teacher of an all-girls school, which is the Urban Assembly Institute for Young Women in Math and Science, and I was blessed with that opportunity to see that you can build a strong culture, you can empower women of color, you can actually focus on the disciplines of math and science. And through that, it started to resonate that, you know, perhaps, you know, being a leader is something that I want to do, but I was apprehensive about the pressure and the responsibilities. But everyone would say, you know, you're already doing the job. You already stay late. You already put the children first, so why not try it? And then I entered a program called New Leaders for New Schools, which was an amazing program. It allowed me to go throughout various parts of the United States to see education on a national level. And I wrote a proposal. From there, the New York City Department of Education approved it, and so now I'm the founding principal of Mount Hope Bridges Academy, which is located in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn. So that's kind of my story and how I got to where I am right now. But we just had our first graduating class, and it's been an amazing journey.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. Now, you are in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn. Now, everyone who lives in New York, they know that that is not the best neighborhood. Is that a place that you chose to have to school, or is it just happened that way?
Oh, it, it happened that way. I didn't choose Brownsville at all, but I would say that it is my faith and belief that God chose that place for me. You really have to have a calling to go into education, one. And two, Brownsville is a hard-to-serve community because it's been disenfranchised for so long. But because of my exposure to outstanding educators who believe that all children can succeed and believe that community is the foundation of building strong individuals, I was prepared. I was prepared throughout my academic career to serve Brownsville. So while it seems tough on the outside, it's really a resilient community that I'm proud to serve every single day.
That I commend you. I truly commend you because of the fact that the educational system, as we all know, is flawed. And the flaws come from many different directions. They can come from the bureaucracy. They can come from the lack of funding. They can come from all these different directions. Now, being the founding principal of an educational facility, how do you make all of these things work and not be an emphasis on how you get the job done?
I think that, one, you have to just, in anything you do, you have to know the people that you serve and you have to know the audience that that you're going to be working with. It's not so much going in and having ideas and saying, well, I'm just going to do a takeover. It's really understanding the dynamics of the community itself and what the needs are. What we do in Brownsville, you wouldn't necessarily do in other parts of New York City because the needs are different. So, yes, you know, education, as many have stated, has failed. But if we really look at the reasons why, it's because, one, people are fearful of when you say Brownsville. You know, it has a negative connotation. Every time you hear about it on the news, it's associated with violence. It's associated with low economic status. And so you don't often get the best of the best when it comes to educators. And often people have agendas. The agenda is, I just want a job and I want a paycheck. And when you're in a position as an administrator, it's very hard to remove people because there is a strong union. While it's very supportive, there are steps to having to remove individuals. And when you don't have the parental support oftentimes, and parents, some parents just don't know what they deserve in terms of the quality of education for their children. They want the best, but don't know what the best looks like. So it's very hard to remove the individuals from the building. I pride myself on making sure that people know every environment is not for them, and as long as I'm the principal of the school, we focus on children first. It's not about your issues. It's not about your agenda. It's about the children first. And if you're not serving them in the capacity that you've been called, one, or you've been hired to do, then you can't stay at Mount Hope Bridges Academy. So I put that at the forefront. And then once we, in just building the school, we develop programs that really support the community, not just Mount Hope Bridges scholars, because we call them scholars because they're lifelong learners, but we focus on the community itself because it's really the village that has to take care of the children. But if we don't focus on what those needs are for that village, there's no way that people can come together to serve for the common good.
And you're absolutely correct with that, because what goes on outside the school comes inside the school when the children come in the building. And I understand that wholeheartedly. Now, what type of issues are you confronted with in regards to the children's needs?
Well, I would say first, has been a major concern as an educator even before I became a principal is that there are a lot of mental health needs that our children are confronted with. So while you think of post-traumatic stress syndrome to be associated with war, like wars in Afghanistan, wars in the Middle East, wars in Africa, it really is the fact that children are dealing with abandonment issues. They're dealing with either the death of a parent, a grandparent, someone leaving them abruptly, the fact that there may not be food in the house, the fact that they may be sexually abused. There's so many issues that they're dealing with. And then you have to look at their family as well. We deal with a community that has been stricken by drugs, has been stricken by death, has been stricken by high dropout rates. So there's no healing. There's just, they've learned to adjust and keep moving, but they've never stopped to deal with the pain because the pain can be overwhelming. So what I've had to do is I actually bring consultants in to support not only the teachers, the scholars, but our parents. We create programming that celebrate our women, which is our She Is Me program. We have My Brother's Keeper, which celebrates the men in our community. We have the ICONS program that actually works with our boys who are considered at risk, but just really need mentors and a support system that's consistent. We have the Be Cool, Be Kind national campaign, which our young ladies actually created as a pro-kindness movement so that we can stop focusing on the word bullying, but talk about the strategies that support and empower young women. So it's ongoing. Before we can deal with the academics, which is oftentimes what we only focus on, we have to deal with the social emotional needs of the children and the community. And I keep stressing the word community because they'll only talk about the children, but the children come out of a community, and that community, we all know that the best communities where parents are involved, the children thrive and do well. Our communities where hardest hit aren't getting the financial support, aren't getting quality food, aren't getting quality education, and we become the ones that everyone targets and puts on TV and talking about what happened to the children of color, but no one's supporting us the way we need to be supported.
So hence the reason why you involve everyone, because it becomes everyone's problem, not just one individual.
Exactly.
Yes, I get that completely and totally. Now, when you're creating these particular programs that you're offering, do you do it by committee, or do you just decide that this is what's going to be and you just, you decide to implement this program?
So the programming is really a collaborative effort. I mean, I'm blessed with being able to, God gave me a vision to open up a school, and throughout my practice as an educator, I've just had really great relationships with the children that I've served and just hearing their stories. So it's really tailored to where we're serving the scholars of that community. In terms of Montfort Bridges Academy, I have a director of programs. Her name is Monica Chu. We sit and we do a lot of talking, just speaking about what are the needs of both the girls, the boys, the parents, the grandparents. But in addition to that, I have a phenomenal staff, and they always keep their ears to the ground, and they things that I might not see that becomes an issue, they bring it to my attention. And really my staff are the ones who become the ones who spearhead a lot of the initiative. So the ICONS program actually came from me having a concern with our young men coming off of the summer last year and really not having anyone anywhere to be supported. There was a lot of shootings. Children were either shot or killed, and so they happened to be young men that were being affected. And the first question I had was, so what's going to happen when they come to the building in September? So I actually sat with my guidance counselor, and I sat with someone who wasn't even my teacher, Dion Turner. He came in, and we had had longstanding conversations since last year. And I said, you know what, I want my young black men to know that they are icons, that they are supposed to be the standard in the community. They are supposed to be the ones that people look up to, and they can change the face of what's going on in their very neighborhood. And that's where really the name ICON started. And it was along with Mr. Turner, Mr. McLeod, who's my guidance counselor, Randy Millard, who's a community activist, and Coach McKinney. Those men stepped up to the plate and were like, we're going to do this. Without even me having to do the big ask, they said, we will be the ones to take care of these young men. And so they did that. But that's not the only male program we've had. We've had HOLA that's also supported our young men for the past 2 years before this upcoming year that we just had. So in just identifying what those needs are and having people who trust and believe in the vision of the school, we've been able to really touch a lot of lives and make sure that we are the ones taking care of our children.
That's great. Now, when you, I know that you probably have a strict criteria for hiring your educators. What is that criteria? What are your requirements? What are the special qualities that you look for when hiring a teacher?
I don't hire by myself. I actually have a committee in place because I believe that one of our models is it's connected to succeed. And the staff members, we're a team. And they have to be able to build the team by knowing who the team members are. So in terms of when it comes to doing a demonstration lesson, when it comes to the interviews, the staff is actually part of it. So there's about maybe 4 to 5 individuals who sit in. In addition, our scholars chime in. They have to give feedback about how they feel about the individual who is trying to be hired by the school. And oftentimes we have parents as well. The bottom line is that, one, they do have to know curriculum. They do have to know the standards that's been set by the state. They have to be willing to not just take this as a 8 to 3 job. They have to know that it requires working after school, which oftentimes doesn't always mean that you're going to get paid for it. But in order to be a great educator, you have to be in a position of learning just as well as you're willing to teach. And they have to be reflective. And when I say reflective, you don't see everything as this is the children's fault. It's more about what could I have done better. Because what I instill in my teachers is the children only know what we've taught them. So if you have limitations in your teaching, you can't blame them for what they don't know. You have to look at your practices and ask the question of what did I fail to teach? So that's pretty much the philosophy behind the hiring.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And it makes a great deal of sense because of the fact that, for example, if I go outside from being in your environment and I don't know about something basic, it's because no one taught me.
Exactly.
So, and I get that completely and totally. Now, you have been called the queen of networking, and you have partnered with a great many people, and they have given you the opportunity to be a part of some amazing events. Tell us about that.
Well, I like to walk into rooms and just read the room and see who's always in a room. I think every individual has something to offer, something to pour into a child. Everybody has a story, and everybody has a level of expertise that we can learn from one another. So when it comes to networking, I do believe in a big ask. If you ask once, if you ask twice, people eventually say yes. If not, you can move on and find someone else who's willing to do the work with you. So when we first started the school, one of our greatest supporters was DJ Beverly Bond, who's the founder of Flat Girls Rock. She actually sponsored a program through Tony Blackman, which is Run Like a Girl. So our first set of young ladies was part of Tony's program, and they learned poetry and learned to write the poetry and also actually do a spoken word piece. In addition to that, we've had support through the New York Knicks when our scholars weren't doing exceptionally well when it came to attendance. They actually were the ones to donate paraphernalia, which tied into the scholars wanting to come to school. So we increased our attendance. We had scholars who the year before, when they were in fifth grade, had 50 days of absence, and by the time they had with the sixth grade, they only had 8 days of absence. In addition to that, we have an ongoing partnership with Long Island University, Polytech, NYU, which is now the NYU School of Engineering for Robotics. We have a partnership through PENSIL with the Navy for a Sea Perch program. And we have a host of others, but all of those partnerships are because those individuals really believed in the children and really saw that there is an investment in the children of Brownsville, and there's an investment in a group of individuals, which mainly is my staff and myself, that are willing to do the work and allow these entities to come in and support all the things that we're trying to do to transform this community.
That is amazing. That's really great. when I was coming up, I came up, you know, it was at a good time, but it was also a transitional time. And there were a lot of free programs for us to get involved in, and it was after school. It was all these different things that were going on. However, as time went by, those things were cut out. Even as my daughter was growing up, and I do understand your perspective being a parent, I found that I had to create things for her to be able to get involved in so that I would know that she was indulged in something productive and positive. With the lack of opportunities for kids once the school doors close, how do you address that?
Again, I can only say that I have an amazing staff who are invested. They are willing to stay even if they don't get paid. And the reason for that is because one of the big things is we have to develop relationships with our scholars. And so they know that when they leave us, if they leave us at 3 o'clock, that there may not be someone waiting at home to support them. They know that there are gang members who are waiting to recruit them. They know that the only thing that's waiting, oftentimes in a household, is Facebook or Twitter, you know, this form of communication where there are just predators or people who are intentionally harmful to them waiting. So my staff actually, they literally will stay at the school till 7, 8 o'clock at night, and we often have kids throughout the hallway. So it's almost like, you know, if you think back to shows like Fame, where mm-hmm. there was kids all over the place. We mm-hmm. literally have that type of environment where every door is open and children can just sit. They can sit, they can read, they can use our iPads to do research, they can just talk to each other, they can talk to an adult. Because as a child myself, when I was growing up, middle school was hard, only because it was a time in which my parents separated, and I remember the adults having the door open for me. And those same adults were at school, and these were administrators, till 9, 10 o'clock at night, and I had somewhere to stay. So I always remembered that, and when I opened up the school, even if the teachers didn't want to stay, I knew that I wanted to be that person who was there to provide an open door for them so that they had a safe environment. So, yes, we don't always have the funding, because the reality is that we're in economic crisis where budgets are always constantly cut. But at the same time, we do, it's like the rewards that you put into each child is priceless. And so what you may not see initially on the onset, what you gain in the end, that investment, there's no measure, there's no price on that.
I got that. I understand wholeheartedly. You give your scholars a safe place to be where they can be themselves and be comfortable without having to worry about what's going on the outside. And that is so important because everyone knows that once you leave some place where you feel comfortable, you're just open and you're afraid. And that also impedes your ability to learn and want to learn as well, knowing that you got to go back out there. And that's great. You give them, you really give their mind a place to rest, and that's so important. Oh my goodness! Like I said, you're my hero.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And there was another point that I wanted to make when you said that you'll continue to ask until somebody says yes. I think that's a Brooklyn thing, you know.
Right.
Because I used to tell people. Yeah, I used to tell people. They say, "So what are you gonna do?" I said, "I'll keep asking until somebody tell me yeah." That's all.
Right. Exactly.
So I get that. And the other thing is, I wanted to ask you personally, even though this is just the beginning of your career in education, because you probably got 20, maybe 30 more years to go. What has been what has been the most rewarding feeling you have gotten so far?
Probably the most recent would be our first graduating class. There's so many that I could probably touch upon, but that first graduating class literally is a culmination of 3 years of hard work. which is blood, sweat, and a lot of tears. The sacrifice of just being a parent myself and having a daughter and having to spend more time in the building, you know, and having my parents who retire who take care of my daughter to make sure she gets to school because she's in middle school herself. It allowed everyone to see this is why we work so hard. It allowed a community to see this is why we work so hard. It allowed the scholars to see this is why they expect so much of us and they keep annoying us and they keep nagging us because this is what you deserve and you are descendants of greatness. And education is just always that foundation that will allow you great opportunity. So for me, that has to be like the greatest moment. Beyond that, ironically, this was the same year that the school that I started, that I spoke to you about as a founding teacher,
mm-hmm.
it was also their first graduating class of their 12th grade. So I had those young ladies from the time they were in 6th grade, and once they were transitioning into 9th grade, I didn't really get to see them as much. I stayed in contact, but I was able to go see them graduate as well. So to have my own scholars as the principal of Mount Hope Bridges Academy now going to high school and to see a group of dynamic young women going to college, it's just like so fulfilling because it just speaks to and the possibility.
Indeed. I got goosebumps. That is beautiful. I mean, really beautiful because of the simple fact that you do have a child of your own and there are concerns and needs for that child. And you're also sacrificing and dedicating your time to help a whole group of children. And that just speaks to you, who you are as a parent, who you are as an educator, who you are as a person. And we can't find enough people like you out there. Because we need you to clone yourself. Because we need more like you. It's just, I see, you know, just from me going through my daily routines and traveling to different places, I see the importance of having an establishment like yours. And I see the need for more places, more buildings, more schools like yours so that our children can have a chance because of the simple fact that, yes, oftentimes they give up on the inner city youth. Yes, oftentimes they already have an agenda about what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. But we have to fight that. We have to go against that. We can't be on their plan. We have to create our own plan. And that's exactly what you did. And it takes a lot of faith. Sincere faith to be able to do this, and I like I said, you are indeed my hero.
Thank you.
Yes, and now, what are the highlights of your program that would attract new students?
Well, I'll say one of the highlights would be. What we offer, a small learning environment where we really get to know the scholars themselves as individuals. In addition to that, you know, offering a lot of programming to not only the scholars but their parents. We're now venturing into developing a partnership with Brookdale Hospital because we know we have a lot of scholars who are stricken with sickle cell anemia, diabetes, and they may have social emotional needs that have not been met on a learning or emotional disability type of level.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that is like I stated before, the programs She Is Me, where we celebrate our women and the young ladies in our community, the icons for our boys, robotics. Whether it's through the Navy or Poly NYU, culinary arts program. We like for our graduation, we actually had the scholars. I wanted to see Coming to America come to life because I felt like we worked so hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it was our sixth graders who did the African drumming. We had sixth and seventh graders who did the African dancing. It was our boys who did the South African boot step. It was one of our young ladies who did a spoken word piece, Maya Angelou, phenomenal woman. So we really celebrate the talents of our young, of our community and our population. We actually worked with Councilmember Darlene Neely in launching the Brownsville Film Festival because it was just my belief that our children need to be the ones to tell their stories through their eyes. And what you see on the TV is based off of what you see on the news. And there is a story to be told about Brownsville that's brilliant and beautiful. And we don't get to see that until the children actually are taught by Real Works to create 8-minute documentaries that we launch at the Film Festival every single year. So there's a number of things that we do, and that it just doesn't stop there. I believe in always listening and hearing what the needs are and creating the programs accordingly.
I want to go back to school. I want to come to your school.
Come on. I mean, you don't have to go back to the classes, but I do invite you to just come. It will be a wonderful opportunity for the for our young scholars to just hear you and hear your story, because guess what? We need to celebrate what you do. You are a pioneer in your own right, just having an online radio station. That's amazing. And you know what? We don't tell our children that this is a career, this is an opportunity. You can make your own way. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Too often times we're saying children need to be doctors, they need to be lawyers, and that's great. They should be, given that that's what they want to do. But in this day and age, we have to create our own careers. And other people are doing it. Why can't we?
You're absolutely right.
So
You're right.
I would love for you to come and talk to them about what it is you do, because this is something that they never would have thought. Their parents, like us as parents, we would not know that there's an opportunity like this.
Yes. And I did teach at a charter school in Philadelphia on Saturdays. And what I did was I taught them how to create their own radio show from scratch.
Nice.
It was a great experience, and I would love the opportunity to do it again. You just let me know when.
Okay, definitely. I will definitely do that.
Yes. And now, what are you going to do for the summer?
This is the first summer that I literally have taken days off, and no one had to, well, they still banned me from the building, literally. But for the past 3 years, I have worked consistently without a day off, because I've had to hire, I've had to move rooms, I've had to set up classrooms. So having a graduating class, having hired, with the exception of two teachers, I took this week off just to breathe, sleep late, and enjoy just being a mom and taking my daughter to school and being home when she gets there. So it's about replenishing my spirit. Just still I work. I won't lie, because I am a workaholic. I literally came out of one of the Connecticut muffins out here and was writing just what my next steps will be for 2013, 2014, because the work doesn't stop. But just thanking God for just the wonderful opportunity the last 3 years, and just asking him to do what he will with me for the next umpteenth years that he wants me to do this job. So that's pretty much what I am going to be doing this summer.
Okay. As long as you have some downtime, that's important, because they need you, and they need you to be top form. So that's important, yes. Because, you know, as an African-American woman, you have a tendency, okay?
Yes, we do, to do all things until our back breaks. And
yes, and never take time for ourselves. Okay.
Exactly.
Yes, that is important. Well, I want to thank you so much for just being with us. And I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay on the line, because there were some questions I wanted to ask you privately. So
okay.
You just hang on. And I want to thank you for the opportunity for us to get to know who you are and to get to know more about your program and your wonderful educational facility, because it is a facility, it's not a building. And
right.
And to learn about how you help your scholars become the future leaders of America. And this is something, these are the stories, like you said, that we don't hear. These are the things that we don't get the opportunity to embrace, to share, and to repeat over and over again. And I thank you for the opportunity, because when people listen to this show, they will know that we are more than just what you see on TV. We are more than just the snippets that you catch in the street on an off moment. We are so much more and so much bigger than you could ever imagine, and there are people out here who are making it happen. And for that, as a parent, as a human being, I am grateful. We are all grateful.
Well, I thank you for that. And you know, the reality is that I'm doing what I'm not. I don't feel like I'm doing anything exceptionally different. I'm doing what's supposed to be done. So that's my philosophy in life. This is what's supposed to be done. That's why our children wear the purple and the black, because it signifies royalty. And if you think from the time of where we once came, that was the expectation. We were supposed to take care of our own. We build together, we learn together, and we protected one another. And that's what we're supposed to do.
You're right. So Let's keep it going. Let's keep it moving, and let's just keep our eyes on our prize, and that's our youth. That's what
yep.
we need to do. Yes, indeed. So I'm gonna let you hold on while I make some announcements, and then we'll chat a little bit, and that'll be the end of the show for my listeners. So just to all my listeners, please thank Nadia Lopez for joining us and sharing her story with us. For that, we are completely and totally grateful. So it was just a wonderful opportunity and experience. And I have to thank Camille for providing me and you listeners this opportunity.
Thank you, Camille.
So just hold on, okay? To all my listeners, I got some, as you know, we launched our first new segment called Wealth Zone Radio. And Wealth Zone Radio is discussing generational wealth, how you, your family, your neighbors, your friends, your grandparents can all create an environment that creates wealth, not only for you today, but for your future generations, for your future stories, to tell your children so that they will know how to save, how to invest, how to do all the amazing things that they can do for themselves to create a legacy that they will definitely be proud of. Also, keep your ears out, because I believe, if I'm correct, we will have one of the members of the Real Housewives of Atlanta on our show. So it may not be one of the ladies, but I can give you one hint. Pita, 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 pita. So keep your ears out. Saturday, I'll let you know all the details. For that, I have to say thank you. Thank you to my listeners for always being there for me. Your dedication and your loyalty just really makes me really proud and happy and grateful. I want to wish you all a very safe, safe 4th of July. Please be safe and enjoy. Have a wonderful evening. Be well.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.